From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. Let's see, Entertainment Weekly columnist, blogger, autobiographer, Oscar winner. What hasn't Diablo Cody done? Well, besides this show, she hadn't done cable, but now she's got a new series on Showtime, The United States of Tara. Diablo, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. As I was watching the show, I found myself thinking about a line from Candy Girl when you talk about vulnerability. And it just sort of stuck to me just watching the show, just about those moments transition for Tara, who has multiple personality disorder. Those seem like incredibly kind of like vulnerable, like Achilles heels moments to me. Those moments where we see her going, just the shift starting to happen or her coming out of it.
Yeah. Toni Collette is also, she's so skilled at portraying those moments of vulnerability. There is a common theme in my work, and I think it's interesting that you brought up Candy Girl, because it's not something people talk about that much.
Why?
But, because, I mean, it's a slim memoir about stripping.
You sold me. I'll go read it again.
You know, it's kind of a beach read, even though, you know, I am proud of it. But yeah, I'm always interested in women and the different sort of persona.
The guises they take on.
Yeah, the guises that they take on and the ways that they have to transform in order to survive.
The reason I brought up Candy Girl is because it's you're taking on, it's like you're like trying out for different parts and playing these different characters. Like there's a section we talk about when you put on the blonde wig, how differently you're regarded and how instead of being a competitor to these other women, they think of you as somebody who actually is worthy of being around them.
Right, I became a peer when I put on the wig.
But just taking and put the way you would just sort of like change personality from sort of chapter to chapter in that made me think that came to mind for me as I was watching Tara, just the way you were sort of taking on these things. And then you would talk about how sort of exhausted, how spent each of these changes would leave you.
Yeah, the metaphor I always use is that of a copy machine. You know, each Xerox is slightly lower quality than the next. And when you're constantly having to kind of replicate yourself, it can be taxing on your soul and your body.
But I just thought about that in watching the show, just because it's obviously taxing on her and taxing on the family too. I mean, say the show is Toni Collette plays a woman who decides to stop taking her medication, and her multiple personalities emerge from that, and she has a husband, a teenage daughter, and a young son, a teenage son, and just so the cost. But I just was aware of that, and even in Juno too, just about the cost of just the cost that change demands of you. And
yeah,
that seems to be something that kind of interests you as a writer.
It interests me. I can relate to it on a personal level, you know, as somebody who changed her name and sort of reinvented herself. I definitely relate to this woman who is kind of literally transitioning into these different alter egos from day to day.
And I was fascinated too, just because of the show and the relationship she has with her sister, who is weirdly kind of jealous.
Yeah,
of
I mean,
this.
Her sister. I think we all have somebody in the family who craves attention of any kind, negative or positive. And also, I kind of wanted to create a character that was a voice for the skeptics, because there are a lot of people who don't even believe in dissociative identity disorder as a diagnosis.
How did this come to you? Because it seems like you are uniquely suited to write it. I just wonder how this all came about.
The idea of a mother with multiple personalities was an original idea that came from Steven Spielberg. And he had come up with the concept, I'm not sure when, and he thought it would make a cool TV series. I still can't really understand how this happened, but I guess he had read the script for Juno, and Juno had not even gone into production yet at the time. And he was impressed with the script, and he contacted me, and he asked me if I would be interested in writing this show. And naturally, I said yes. You know, I would have said yes to anything. I wanted to work with Steven Spielberg, not just because he's so, you know, respected, but on a personal level. Like, I've always idolized the man. So I kind of went into seclusion and thought about this woman, Tara, invented this character, And I thought about, you know, using sort of modern motherhood as a metaphor, what are some different forms that she would have to take in order to survive? And I started thinking about her alter egos, her personalities, and it all just kind of came together.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to Diablo Cody, the creator of the new series on Showtime, United States of Tara, in addition to winning the Oscar for her Juno screenplay. One of the things that struck me about it, though, and I was worried before I watched it, is that with one bad turn, it could feel like bad sketch comedy.
Absolutely. I was really worried about that. And in fact, I didn't think we would find an actor who would be able to handle that particular challenge. We were so lucky to get Toni Collette, because it really could have become the wrong kind of comedy. And we didn't want it to be. We obviously did not want to make fun of dissociative identity disorder, which is the classification for this disease we're talking about. You know, we wanted to show how families cope with dysfunctional situations in humorous ways. When Toni agreed to do the show, it was kind of the luckiest day of all of our lives, because you take her seriously. I don't think it ever becomes too broad.
I have to say, for me, I was really kind of concerned, too, about the tone that the other actors would be able to find in playing it. I mean, because it's certainly about her.
Yeah.
But there's got to be a kind of realism in the way the other members of the family react to that, too. And that must have been a concern for you as well.
It was. I mean, I was worried about everything, to be honest. Everything's a concern to me. You know, I wonder, is the dialogue going to suck? Are the actors going to be good?
But from the two pieces of yours that we've seen, two produced pieces, Juno and this, family dynamics, be they functional or dysfunctional, are clearly important to the way you think as a dramatist.
Yeah, and I don't know why that is. I never really thought that I was going to be writing sort of family-centric stuff, and yet it seems to have turned out that way.
What? It's funny, really?
Yeah, never. You know, I don't know what I envisioned myself doing, but it's weird. I guess I thought it would involve zombies or something.
I'm always surprised when I'm
sitting in front of my computer and final draft is open and I'm writing dialogue between a mother and a father. I think, what do I know about this? Nothing.
But it's so funny, because it's like when you're writing the screenplays as compared to the other stuff, you're almost like a different person, because just looking at the EW columns or having read the book, there's a playfulness about those things. And yet
the EW column is probably the closest to who I am as a person, yeah.
It's almost as if you're like dictating that stuff to somebody, the EW stuff. There seems to be real ease in that.
You know, I'm a consumer of junk, which is why it's kind of interesting that I'm writing, you know, a sort of, I guess, I don't know. I never thought I would be writing something with such an impressive pedigree, you know, working with Spielberg and being at Showtime and working with, you know, writers who come from, you know, shows like The West Wing and stuff. You know, it's funny to me, because I've always been I've always been enthusiastic about lowbrow culture.
Just the family stuff, I just find myself so fascinated by the way the father deals with the stuff at the house and then kind of lets his frustrations out when he goes to work. I mean, it seems like it's really deeply thought out. Like, he put a lot of thought into the way people are different in different venues.
Yeah.
They
have to be. That's the thing.
That's unusual for television, though, especially for comedy, too. Usually it's these characters walking into a room and always sort of being catalysts.
Oh, no, people are consistent to a fault on television. But in real life, not so much. I just think it's interesting how mercurial people can be. And I guess, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the dad, because I have to admit, when I wrote this show from a feminist perspective and I was thinking about women and how, you know, a woman might have to be nurturing in one moment of her life, and then the next moment she might have to be, you know, sort of traditionally masculine, you know, aggressive. And then, you know, she might also have to be, you know, a sexual creature later that night, and how challenging that is as we kind of try to figure out what are we supposed to be. But it's true with the character of Max as well, her husband. You know, he has to be incredibly supportive when he's at home, and when he's at work, you kind of see an edge.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought was kind of fascinating, too, that it's not just that she's different people, but that her family members, like her daughter, when she goes to work at the restaurant, she pays attention, she's kind of respectful of her boss.
Yeah.
It's really intriguing to me that you found a way to kind of play this out so it's not just in the house with Tara.
Yeah, and the son is, you know, the son is gay, But he's actually sort of infiltrated this Christian youth group on the show because he wants so desperately to be accepted by this boy that he likes. So, yeah, it's about being two-faced.
I guess Diablo Cody, the creator of United States of Terror on Showtime and also the Oscar-winning screenwriter of Juno. I wonder for you if that was conceptually what you were doing, that you want to show how divided people are and not just a spy who's identified as being.
Yeah, no, yes, I did. That was deliberate for sure. For sure. I mean, I had some ideas. I wanted to take that to an even more extreme level with the daughter. Originally, I had written her character as being a total follower who would be involved in like a different trend every week. And that didn't really translate as well on, you know, once we really started writing the season. So that conceit kind of got scrapped. But, yeah, I mean, definitely I wanted sort of each character to kind of represent a different way that we betray ourselves or adapt.
But it does feel like the kind of betrayal, because you talk about her as being somebody who follows trends. In the episode where she has to dye her hair to go work at the restaurant, you would somehow think that that would be like a line in the sand. That's when she wouldn't cross, but she completely accedes to it in record time.
Yeah, and she becomes a smoker really quickly, too.
No, I just thought this is really interesting to see this stuff played out for comedy rather than making a big deal about and beating out for dramatic stuff, which is the way we would expect it to be.
If I was capable of writing straight drama, I sure as heck would try, but...
Really?
Yeah, for some reason, I have tried.
Write your own West Wing episode?
Oh, no, I have sat down and said, I'm going to write my serious film. Or, you know, I'm going to write my costume drama. And it doesn't work. It inevitably devolves into jokes. So I guess I am fated to write comedy. I can do nothing else.
I guess when I heard about the show, I figured, oh, this is going to be, I know how this is going to work. You know, they're going to be kind of supportive of her, and or else they'll be just kind of comically antagonistic towards each other. And I didn't know that you were going to play it out in this way, where everybody is different every place else, because that's a really unusual kind of line of progression to use with characters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, I didn't want the family to be, there's so many sort of cut and dry sitcom families on television. I didn't want to do another family like that. I wanted them to be supportive, but not in a totally treacly kind of maudlin way. You know, I wanted, and one really important thing was, I think a lot of people expected that Tara's disorder was going to be some secret, and that nobody in the community would know about, and that the family was sort of trying to protect that secret. And so instead, I made it kind of common knowledge. You know, a lot of people are discussing it, even if they're not discussing it in front of her. And some people are even intrigued, you know. Some people even fetishize her disorder because it's so unusual. They think it's kind of cool. I thought that was a more modern take on things than treating mental illness like this sort of monster in the closet. Because as I was, you know, writing the show, I'm watching TV and I'm paying attention to what's going on around me. And I see all these commercials for psychiatric drugs. And I see how it's just become more and more mainstream over the years. You know, everybody knows somebody who takes Prozac. I have taken Prozac. Like, it's not the sort of boogeyman that it used to be. So I thought, I want this to be a modern take on living with mental illness as opposed to just being all about the stigma.
We'll take a break. My guest is Diablo Cody, the creator of the new series on Showtime, United States of Tara. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. We're talking about the new series in the United States of Terror with its creator, Diablo Cody. Now, I guess one of the things I have to ask you is that it must have been really fun for you as a consumer of pop to help create a title sequence.
Oh, yeah. That was, you know, I had a lot of help, though. You know.
But I'm sure you were thinking, as somebody who's watched a lot of TV, that title sequence had to be really important to you, wasn't
it? It's funny that you should mention that because, yes, I wrote on my blog recently that, you know, I am obsessed with title sequences. But I have to say, like, I am a fan of the ones from the 80s where you would get, like, a brief performance clip from each actor and their name kind of superimposed over it, you know, like on Growing Pains. I was kind of hoping we would do something like that. And instead we wound up with this, you know, incredibly beautiful papercraft montage. And I was like, ugh.
You like it.
No, I'm kidding.
Don't
it's
front.
Awesome.
Don't front.
I am fronting. I believe that my name comes up over like a birthday cake. And that makes me kind of happy. That's important. Everybody pays attention to that, whether or not they admit it.
That's what I'm saying. But just to figure as somebody who... Anybody who can reference Gleaming the Cube in a book, anybody who pays the kind of detail that you did must have been really excited about that.
No, I was. I definitely was. And especially since, like, I don't know if you've noticed this, but for some reason cable shows seem to have really cool title sequences. Like, Weeds is cool. Mad Men is cool. I was thinking, we got to compete with those guys. So I'm happy with what we came up with.
But I just felt like, for you, just all the building blocks of doing a show... It must have been kind of a chance to realize a dream for you.
Oh yeah. Oh, every moment that I'm involved with the show is realizing a dream for me. I mean, as somebody as obsessed with pop culture as I am, to be making a TV show, I can't even articulate how cool that is. Like it's beyond a dream. I can't believe it's happening.
But you must feel in some parts, too, though. Now you have something you have to live up with because all these shows you've been making fun of over the years now.
Oh, I know. I said my TV karma is so bad. Like, seriously? Yeah. I have ripped so many. I was a TV critic, you know? Like, if I get spanked, I deserve every lick.
Have you been reading the reviews?
No.
Really?
Believe it or not, I show a lot of restraint when it comes to that kind of thing. I don't read blogs, don't read reviews. I do pay attention to ratings. That's what matters.
And?
They are excellent. I'm very happy. Knock this thing.
I just would think that you would be curious about this a little bit, even if just some sort of gallows humor kind of way, just to see how people are responding.
I'm, you know what? The people who are responding to it positively are communicating with me directly. You know, they're emailing me and leaving me messages on my MySpace. And so that's where I get my feedback.
How rigorously do you check that? Because we've had a number of creators who would talk about that and talk about how they've read some things in the post things. Like when Tim Kring was here, he talked about how he was shocked the way some people were responding to Heroes. And we get that here when people... So I wonder for you how important that is to see what that kind of communal response is.
It is. It is important to me. I am curious about how people are feeling about things. But I think here's the thing. I come from a unique perspective because having been a TV critic, having spent sort of years in obscurity as like a snarky pop cult blogger, I know that sometimes the way those people respond to things is not necessarily sincere. Sometimes you just see the opportunity for a joke or a pun.
You're talking about the early days of Television Without Pity, which was incredibly like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I'm talking about like just because I've been on both sides, which not every artist has been. I know that sometimes if you get a bad review, it's because the person wrote a lot of good reviews recently and they feel the need to...
Saying this to somebody who's actually a critic?
That you know you what think... I'm... No, I'm not talking... You're like, come on, man. You're respected, like, and legitimate. Like, I was, you know, a fool. There's a big difference. And, you know, I think right now there's a lot of gray area where people are trying to figure out what is legitimate criticism, what is the peanut gallery. I'm certainly not discounting the opinions of the people on the internet because they're entitled to them. But there are people like you, and then there's, you know, Joe Blow in Brooklyn who's pissed off that I have a TV show. Big difference.
But, you know, as you said yourself, once upon a time you were one of those people.
Exactly. That's how I know. I used to write some incredibly mean things that were not, in fact, sincere. They were not really, they didn't really reflect my authentic feelings about that person. I was just pissed off that day because I was working in a freaking 4x3 box.
Wow, this really is like therapy. It's the treatment. Yeah. My guest is Diablo Cody. As I mentioned before, blogger, but also creator of the United States of Terra on Showtime. You've assumed so many voices in your writing. I mean, the way you blogged is very different from the way you wrote the book.
That's telling you, I think writing a book is the hardest.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because?
It's so dense. I always say you're a one-man band. Like, everything that happens, you have to, it's all on the page. You have to create all of it. Whereas if I can write a pretty thin scene, and if we get a good director and some good actors, you can make it happen. I've done both.
So this is your way of saying you felt there were thin scenes in Juno?
No, I guess what I mean is, like, coming from a strictly writerly perspective, just in terms of density, just in terms of concentration, writing prose is harder.
If you're writing the book belongs to you. You don't have the added cushion of the director or the actor.
Well, I never get that cushion anyway.
I'm sorry.
Based on some of the feedback I get, you would think I, like, design costumes. Like,
oh, really?
Well, you know, it was interesting to me, for instance, with Juno. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a writer so closely identified with the finished project. And I'll never understand why that is. I don't know what it is I did differently. But it kind of upset me sometimes because I felt like, you know, this is a Jason Reitman film.
I think because there's so much a single voice in that, that there's an assumption that that dialogue comes from the writer, and the director was kind of, it felt, I think, confessional to a lot of people.
It was confessional for sure, but I think a lot of movies are. And yet still you don't really see the writer being credited in that way.
You don't think it's also because you had such a kind of unique provenance?
That's probably why. I just don't think that's necessarily a legitimate reason.
But it's this thing that people are also looking for a way to try to figure out what the film is.
And, yeah, I don't know. You're making it seem like a positive thing.
Do you feel like it's a positive or a negative thing?
I guess at the time it felt negative because you used that specific word, cushion. That's a comforting word, isn't it? And I didn't feel like I got the cushion of this was a team effort, this was a collaboration. It turned into this is Diablo Cody's movie. And every opinion that I have about it pertains to her as well.
But you had the perspective of having come from having this background, having written the book, having done these things, so people kind of felt they knew you in ways that they often don't know first-time screenwriters.
That is true.
So people were reacting to their perception of what they thought
true.
You were.
I guess the more accessible you make yourself, the more vulnerable you are as a writer, for sure. I will always be super accessible. Like, that's like a vow that I've made in my life. Yeah, I will always be blogging. I'll always be communicating with people. And, you know, I'll always be sort of expressing my feelings, as cheesy as that is.
I just sort of thought about your career as I was getting ready for this. In a lot of ways, I'm reminded of Nora Ephron, who started off as a journalist.
Oh, I love her.
Now, she came from a screenwriting family, but she wrote a bunch of really great stuff for Esquire magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of kept that thing, that writing part of her alive for a long time, and used it as a way to transition into film. And I'm reminded of her when I think about your stuff.
That's high praise, so thank you. Journalism was absolutely the springboard for my career, for sure. That was probably the biggest opportunity I was given, and it was the first time that I ever wrote for a living. And criticism, interestingly enough, although I was not great at it, as I said, you know, I never considered myself a serious critic, but that was where I started to find my voice.
In the criticism, though, there's a real sense of pleasure. I mean, you're trying to find things you respond to when you're writing about them, which I always thought was fun in your writing.
Yeah, thank you.
I guess I can tell when you're speechless now.
No, I appreciate it. I'm not used to being treated so well.
Where is this persecution
complex? I have a
going?
Massive persecution complex.
Is this, then this isn't just about Catholicism either. Where does this come from?
That's funny. I don't know.
You feel like I'm going to criticize you, so you have to disarm it before I say anything?
No. You know, I was really just, you know, perhaps it, I was just, you know, I guess maybe it probably doesn't come across on radio. I was just, you know, I was accepting the compliment.
That doesn't...
I'm smiling, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, she is. She is smiling.
I do, ear to ear.
It's a treatment. I'm talking to Diablo Cody, the creator of the new series on Showtime, United States of Tara, in addition to winning the Oscar for her Juno screenplay. We're talking about these characters. They are kind of these misfits who, in some ways, with the exception of Tara, the people around them kind of have some sense of who they are from place to place.
Yeah.
And in Juno, there were a bunch of people, too, who didn't really quite know how to communicate with each other, who kind of fit as well. So to hear you saying that you feel like you don't, again, I think because we've read about you and read you, we think we know you. So we...
And the thing is, you do. you do. Like, I'm pretty excruciatingly open. I guess I've taken the cushion away from myself.
But this makes me wonder, though, how much do you enjoy the process of writing? Because you write a lot.
I love it. I'm happiest when I'm actually actively writing. I enjoy writing more than I enjoy producing. I enjoy writing in solid, you know, I enjoy writing alone more than I enjoy being on a set and collaborating. I'm really introverted in that way.
Because you were talking about writing the lion's share of the series before we started.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if that's one of these things, like, because, you know, we think about the great series over the years, and so many of them were written by a single person, or you felt that person's sensibility, like maybe David Chase or...
I like the shows that have, like, a very specific author, you know, the David E. Kelly, that kind of thing. And, you know, I hope we're doing something like that. But at the same time, you know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the other writers who are better than me. You know, they are more experienced. These are people who really know how to write television, whereas I'm still very green in that regard.
What's the difference between the way you do it and what they do?
You know, I'm writing episodic TV is like a specific challenge. Like you can't tie everything up with a bow at the end of each episode. You know, you have to leave people wanting. That was a skill that I had to learn. And it was hard for me. I think originally, you know, when I started taking a crack at the episodes, they kind of came off almost like short films. And they had a beginning, a middle, and an end. There needs to be that sort of ambiguity and that addictive quality when you're writing a season of television.
Because of something like this especially, you want to have at least some semblance of a serial feel to it, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah. And originally, I wasn't even sure how I was going to do that. I thought, can't we just write about what this woman is up to from week to week? You know, does there really need to be a thread? And yes, there does.
What was your big fear, though, about writing the series TV?
Everything. Like, first of
but
all...
But you must have something specific. You must have been
here's
some
the
show.
Specific thing. Everybody told me television is a writer's medium. You are going to love it. You're going to have so much creative control. And I thought, oh, no. Like... Everybody said it like it was a positive thing. And I was like, oh no, like I'm so used to, you know, coasting as like the little buddy on set. You know, when you're the writer on a movie, you get to sit around and hang out and just kind of enjoy the process. On a TV show, you're a lot more involved, which isn't necessarily something I wanted. Like I'm, first of all, I still feel like I have a lot to learn. So it's not like I'm going to charge in there and take control. Secondly, I'm kind of antisocial. I'm kind of introverted. It's weird for me to be surrounded by people. Being in a room with a bunch of other writers, weird process to me. Don't understand how anybody gets anything done. So all of that was alien and kind of anathema to my personality. So I was just the entire process of television to me was scary. It turned out to be an amazing experience. You know, we made a whole season. It was kind of trial by fire.
So many of the great shows are shows that had an end. Is there an end point that you built in for the series that you only go so far or a certain number of series?
I want to be like those guys on Lost and pretend that I know what's going to happen. You know they don't. Yes, I have Tara's destiny completely mapped out. I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm not panicking in the least.
Wow. Now you got me sweating. And we're out of time. You have to come back. This has been really fun.
Thank you so much. This is wonderful. Thank you so much.
My guest is Diablo Cody, the creator of United States of Terra on Showtime and also the Oscar-winning screenwriter of Juno. Our recording engineer at NPR West is Patrick Murray. Bob Carlson is the editor. Jim O'Dempsey, the producer. I have only one personality, so to speak. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.